This episode is brought to you by the Mentor Dino Network, a community-based platform for early and mid-career design professionals to have the technical skills, professional development training, and resources they deserve to have not only a successful project, but also step into leadership roles with confidence.
Hello, and welcome to the Mentor Dino podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Rossier. I am an architect and founder of Mentor Dino. Join me each week as I speak with amazing professionals in and around the architecture, engineering, and construction industry, as we are all part of a larger interconnected community. We discuss everything from career stories, lessons learned, and advice for others finding their own unique career path. Thank you to all of our current subscribers, and if you're new, welcome to the conversation. And if you like this episode, please do me a favor by hitting subscribe, like, or share it with a friend. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support them on their own unique career journey.
On today's episode of the Mentor Dino podcast, I would like to welcome Alex James, head of U.S. recruitment at The Crowd and founder of the nonprofit Assemble in Los Angeles, California. Thank you, Alex, for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I always like starting out with my loaded question, if you don't mind introducing yourself to my listeners to let them know a little bit about your experience and journey so far in your education and career.
Yeah, for sure. I started off in architecture. I studied architecture in the UK, hence the accent. And I then qualified, worked there for a little bit in London, and then made the journey across to Australia. I went to Sydney. I was supposed to go traveling. I got stuck in Sydney, which is a good place to get stuck. And it was great. Yeah, I worked in architecture for about 9 years, up to a job captain position, worked on healthcare projects, some aviation projects as well. And then I made the pivot to recruitment. I thought it was time for a bit of a change, and I wasn't, I guess, enjoying architecture as much as I should have been. So I made that switch, and I've been doing recruitment now for the last 14, 15 years. I've been in the US for the last 8 years. And as you said, yeah, currently in LA.
So I know that's a really big shift and pivot to go from traditional architecture work and drafting and modeling every day to shifting over to the recruitment side. So what spawned your first interest in the recruitment area? Like, were you exposed to anything?
Yeah, I was in Australia, and I had a lot of friends that were British, even though I was in Oz, and a lot of them were working in recruitment. So I did have a bit of exposure there. I'd use recruiters as well when I had to find a job myself. In terms of the pivot, it wasn't really kind of one decision. It was kind of more gradual. And I think, yeah, I was working on these projects, working on these healthcare projects that took quite a long time. And I wasn't really enjoying it. I was kind of, you know, the long process. I was working late nights a lot, and I wasn't much of a fan of that. I was doing a lot of stair details, and it just felt like I wasn't really playing to my strengths. And I remember kind of looking around as well and thinking, oh, when you're younger, you don't mind kind of, you know, you think, right, this is what I've got to do these kind of long hours till, you know. And then I remember looking around to see, like, my boss was still there, and I thought, you know, you kind of want to be aspiring to be someone else, and if you're not, then it's you're probably in the wrong job. And lovely guy, but I just remember thinking, you're not seeing your family, it's like another late night. And I've got nothing wrong with late nights. I probably work later now in this job, but it was probably a sign that I was in the wrong job. And also, I kind of love the people aspect. More so than actually drafting and doing the documentation. I was kind of often at the, networking events and going to anything I could outside of kind of the, the work environment there. So that was probably the telling sign for me. And I think, yeah, also helping friends get jobs without, so I was kind of doing recruitment without officially being in the role.
Yeah, and I know it's a struggle for a lot of professionals when they have like kind of that one idea on what being an architect is, and then it's again, like you said, one thing when you're a young professional and fresh out of school, and okay, you don't have other responsibilities. Working late nights isn't terrible if your firm pays overtime or anything, then it's almost a benefit to help with school loans. But yeah, when you see the main firm owner there all the time working late too, it's like, okay, that's, I don't know, 20, 30 years of doing the same thing and equally doing the late nights.
I think it's unfortunate it becomes part of the culture sometimes. Like I worked at other places where it wasn't like that. And I think it just it becomes part of it. And even when you're studying, I did all-nighters then as well, just to get a project through through the door. So yeah, it's challenging.
Yeah, so what was the experience like shifting over to recruitment and then getting your first job on the recruitment side?
Yeah, so I had an opportunity to kind of I saw this firm that was advertising, and the kind of the brand was they employ people with a background in the industry to do the recruiting, and I thought this sounds perfect, sounds great. And I remember thinking, if it doesn't work out, I'm in the best place to find a new job. And it did work out. I on my first day, I remember having to look through different firms that we were working with. So the first day was like, just familiarize yourself with all the architecture and design firms we're working with. And I was like, this is great, because I think when I was working as an architect, I was very much head down on my own kind of projects and deadlines. And I always remember they used to bring around the kind of architect's journal, like the magazine, to for everybody to kind of look through it, and then you initial after you finish looking through it, and then you pass it on. And a lot of the time it was like, quickly go through it, that's it. And then, right, I haven't got time to kind of go through this. And now I'm like, all of a sudden I'm in a job where you're kind of encouraged to go through these publications, these magazines, read the articles, and really take time to kind of look at, understand the firms. And, it's very much bigger picture stuff. I think all of a sudden I had these people coming in to meet with me, amazing portfolios, which I loved sort of sitting down with them. And I think coming from that background really helps as well. So you kind of, you understand the same challenges, you understand what's kind of gone on in terms of the drawing and putting together those, packages. And then, visiting clients as well. I kind of loved going out to different design studios and hearing all about the kind of strategies and, challenges they faced with. And it was great. It was really good. All of a sudden it was kind of like bigger picture stuff. I was going to events. I would like the kind of design awards. I wouldn't have gone to those before. I'd have been, obviously part of the project team and potentially could go, but a lot of the time it was just, it was too challenging, I found. So now I'm kind of that guy that goes out to meet with the architects and designers.
Yeah, and I've got a couple follow-ups to those ones. So I know the
Sure.
first time I was reached out to a recruiter or reached out by a recruiter, I was so burned out. I was absolutely exhausted and I didn't take the time to really figure out the proper next steps I wanted to go. But I found when I talked to that recruiter, they didn't understand what we did as architects and designers to understand what the firm was like or the types of questions I was asking. They would come at it with the lens of it being more of a standard corporate job. But, in the end, you're also trying to get somebody hired for an office. So that also benefits you as well to bring somebody through the door. But I think my first recruiter experience was pretty negative because they didn't understand the ins and outs of the business. And so I think you come at it with a completely different angle because you've been there, you've done it, you know what architecture work culture is like, and how that's so different.
Yeah, and it's, if you're putting people in the wrong kind of, you know, jobs and opportunities, it's not going to work out. It's not going to last. And, you know, this business is all about building relationships. And I wouldn't want to put someone in a job that I didn't want to do, particularly, you know, in terms of the culture. So I think it's important to, you know, make sure it's the right culture match and, you know, has the right values. And I had an experience once when I was interviewing a candidate and talked about, you know, having the background in design. And they said, oh, this, that's great. That really helps because, you know, the previous person that I spoke with just admitted they didn't really know anything about the industry and they were just going to send me to all of their clients to see if they, you know, got any luck. And for me, I was like, God, that's terrifying. And it's not a great look, you know, for the candidate either. So yeah.
Yeah. I've definitely had my handful of people reach out to me that are recruiters and I can actually tell the ones now when you pay attention to like which ones understand the industry or the firm that they're trying to help versus the ones that are blind or I have to spell check them to be like, hey, you do know I don't live in that city, right? Or you do know how to spell Pittsburgh. Yeah. So like,
I know, but it's a bad rep. I think a lot of recruiters get, unfortunately.
And it doesn't have to be that way. Cause if you have the points to help, so do you help more on the, are firms reaching out to you to help find candidates or are individuals more reaching out to you or
it's how's both. That dynamic? Yeah. I mean, ultimately it's the clients that are, you know, paying our fee and, you know, we're looking to find them the top talent. But yeah, as I said before, it's all about relationships. So if we have someone come to us looking for work, happy to help, happy to connect them where possible. And it might not be, you know, straight away. It might be like in a month's time. Sometimes it might be 3 months, might be a couple of years. You know, if you stay in touch with these good people, I think there's opportunities that present themselves.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for architects trying to determine where to take their career next?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, figure out what you really enjoy, you know, what you love most about, you know, your work and what excites you. I think architecture is a pretty, you know, versatile profession as well. So, you know, it develops problem solving skills, creativity, project management skills. So like all of those things are highly transferable. So you don't have to feel stuck in one kind of lane. I think you can keep an open mind and just kind of potentially explore like non-traditional, you know, architectural roles or, you know, kind of go in-house, go design management, any of those things. And I encourage people to kind of speak with others that have pivoted as well. And probably the best advice is to kind of network and speak to as many people as possible, because the more people you speak to, the more opportunities present themselves.
Yeah. Have you ever guided somebody into, hey, maybe you shouldn't do traditional architecture, like after learning what they're looking for?
A few times actually when we're, you know, often when we interview people and we're sitting down and we're kind of going through stuff and if they're burnt out or they're talking, you know, without the same sort of passion that they maybe should have. And you can kind of relate. So I've definitely had a lot of people that have ended up coming to work with me into recruitment from, you know, not necessarily like still loving, you know, design and architecture and being passionate about that, but not necessarily the actual job in hand. And it could be a lot of the time it might be that it's the wrong firm, it's the wrong culture, it's the wrong size firm. I often think if I go back, you know, if I went back, I may have done better at a kind of smaller, more boutique firm, like focusing on residential work. But I kind of got locked into healthcare stuff, which is really rewarding, but just not, you know, it wasn't the right position for me really.
Yeah, because the difficult parts, every firm's so different and unique. It's almost as unique as every individual. Like you could pick a small firm and equally hate it, but there could be another small firm right next door that would have been the best fit for you.
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Have you noticed any like common themes that firms look for?
Think a lot, I mean, a lot of the time it's the soft skills that people look for. It's that kind of, the mindset, the coachability, communication is obviously huge. So that tends to be ideally, what they would look for above anything else. And then, we've had quite a few specialized roles of late, so tends to be, whether it's data centers, which are obviously very popular at the moment because of AI and everything. So people with that experience, education sector is also, very popular. So yeah, but I mean, yeah, beyond the those kind of specialists or, experience, it tends to be more on the soft skills.
Yeah. So what are there particular markets or firm sizes that the crowd focuses on?
So we focus on all with all the firms, like more boutique, medium-sized, larger scale firms. And we've been going for about 5 years in London. So been doing really well there, and a lot of the firms that are kind of international have connections over here in the US as well. And we've been doing the US for the last 4. So we've been working jointly with those firms to find them top talent. And yeah, that's going well.
Yeah, so what brought you over to the United States if you were over in
In Sydney.
Australia and and
Yeah.
jumping around?
I loved Australia. Sydney's amazing. If anyone hasn't been, you should definitely check it out. It wasn't our plan to kind of come over. I think it was just a career opportunity at the time. And that's pretty ambitious, and had the opportunity to start up a recruitment firm, the kind of branch over here in LA. So kind of jumped at that, and I think at the time they said, well, we don't want to start the LA firm until New York is up and running, and I don't like my future being in someone else's hands. So I said, well, look, send me to New York, let's see if I can help there. So I went there for 6 months and kind of got used to the lay of the land, and then came over to LA and have been here for the last 8 years. Now it's home.
Yeah. So how many locations does Crowd have? Or is
So
everybody focused in certain cities, or is everybody hybrid,
yeah,
remote?
so we've got the London office, which kind of operates all over the UK and Europe. And we have the US, so we've got an office in New York, and we're looking at opening one up in California. And then we've got people that are we've got other companies as well that are more local areas that we partner up with, other agencies, like in Australia and stuff, because there's a lot of good candidates come over from Oz and vice versa, so we connect with them. So yeah.
Yeah. And how, I mean, architecture as an industry, I've noticed common, I don't want to say complaints, but common threads, even when I am following somebody from Canada or the UK or around Europe. So are the struggles we have in the industry worldwide that no matter where your candidate's coming from, are you seeing those commonalities?
I would say so. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a myth that you think how much studying and how much goes into architecture and design. In the UK, you study for like 7 years or before you get qualified. And if you think about doctors, lawyers, when you compare all those sort of three professions, it seems like architecture gets the short straw in terms of salary and compensation. So I feel that's the big thing throughout. Again, with like long hours and stuff like that, because we spoke about earlier. I mean, there's obviously some firms that are pretty good at not kind of doing really long hours and stuff, but they're generally, I'd say as a whole, you're expected to kind of work late to hit those deadlines, and they can come quite frequently. So that would be the common thread.
Yeah, I've learned the UK has like different parts that you have to like hit, and they're almost like mini thresholds. So
Yeah,
at least
like
that's what
part
I've
one.
gotten from, yeah, from
Part
social
one, part two,
media
part three.
understanding.
Yeah.
But I haven't quite figured out, I haven't done a big dive into Canada, but I do have some Canadian colleagues once I joined a national firm, and we have Canadian counterparts that actually cross over into Michigan for work. And so I'm like, oh, yeah. I guess I didn't realize that that's so close, even though like Pittsburgh's not that far from Canada. I just didn't like comprehend that people did that. But then I wanted to shift over to your nonprofit because yes. So I know you're the founder of the nonprofit Assemble. So what is the mission on what you're trying to do there?
Yeah. So the mission of Assemble is to help neurodivergent individuals find employment in the creative industries, including architecture and design. So we offer coaching for job seekers. We offer training for employers, and we also do placement services as well.
So when you're talking about neurodivergent individuals or employers looking yeah. to expand who they're hiring, what defines a neurodivergent individual?
Yeah, great question. So ultimately, it's kind of brains that develop or work differently from typical brains. So, you know, if you think autism, ADHD, dyslexia, OCD, anything that's kind of away from kind of non-typical. And that's where the mission is, to kind of, you know, help those neurodivergent people find employment within those industries.
Now, what if somebody doesn't know they're neurodivergent?
That's good.
I will give you some context on that one.
Yeah.
So I have struggled a lot in my education and learning throughout many, many years. Yeah. And I know my parents tried everything to figure out why my learning is stunted, why I learn differently. And yeah. so traditional schooling, I had to always push myself to go further, learn differently, to be able to get the same concepts that my friends and colleagues got very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so as I move into adulthood, when I discovered neurodivergent, the term, because mm-hmm. my vocabulary is awful, I have found myself definitely within some of the realms and trying to discover where my own learning disabilities fall, to discover how I'm different yeah. and how I think through things. So do you work with adults that may not even know they're neurodivergent? Like, I wouldn't have come up with that myself until the first time I yeah. heard the term, and I started, you know, diving into the research and then figuring out yeah. oh my gosh, this sounds so similar to the struggles I've had throughout decades of
yeah.
school and work.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is, you know, the way we talk is everybody is neurodiverse, right? That's kind of the thing. Like, everybody thinks differently. So although we're kind of making this distinction between someone that's typical and not typical, we're all diverse. We all think differently in quite a unique way. So there isn't, you know, we're not Assemble. It's not saying, you know, please come forward with your diagnosis and we'll see if we can help you. It's very much like that's the mission, is to kind of make places more inclusive. So that's why we have the employer training. The job coaching is there as well. So it's not necessarily just for people that identify as being neurodivergent. You know, anybody that has different challenges or wants to kind of, you know, come and have a chat and talk it through, happy to help as well. So it's, I think the difference between this and the crowd is it has the kind of emphasis towards, you know, someone that's neurodivergent, obviously. If that makes sense.
No, it does. Because I know the first time I heard of the term was through a smaller presentation my firm was having. It wasn't a formal training. But, you know, teaching that we are all individuals, we're unique and diverse, and we come at problem solving all very differently. Mm-hmm. And there are some other conditions that tend to lead people to thinking about things or understanding the world differently. Yeah. And it was one of those like almost light bulb moments for me to be like, wait a minute, this sounds very familiar. As, you know, you're sitting in a presentation, typically multitasking and drafting and getting other things done. And I had to stop drafting. I'm like, wait, like this all makes sense. But they definitely explained it from the approach of we work as a team on all of our projects, and we are all individuals and diverse. And so having more empathy or approaching problems differently and how we view things and how diversity is very healthy for the design field.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. So. And this, like I said, it's very much the early stages assemble, and we've partnered up with some really good partners that are going to help in terms of the training. And like, these are experts that are neurodivergent and will kind of go into an employer's, you know, workspace and kind of help them become more inclusive in that sense. So it's exciting. It's I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what we can achieve.
Yeah. So where did the inspiration come from?
Yeah, so that came from my little girl, my daughter. She was diagnosed with autism when she was three, and kind of my world just like turned upside down. I kind of I thought I knew about autism, but I didn't really. It was kind of a lot of unknowns and mixed emotions at the time, you know, fear, uncertainty, and I just kind of dived into anything I could find about autism. And I listened to podcasts, read books, and I think, you know, as a parent, you want to protect your kids, right? You want to shield them from the future and stuff. And I think through all of the research I was doing, I started to find out more about the challenges and the kind of barriers that exist, but then also the really wonderful strengths that people have, and, you know, the very unique strengths as well. And like my daughter's hilarious. She's really funny, and she sees the world differently, you know. And I you know, think about her future. So I started thinking, well, how can I help? Like, I'm good at recruiting. I can help people find work, help people find jobs. What's going to happen when she gets older? And I thought there's going to be a lot of people like my daughter as well that have these unique strengths and will, you know, potentially need some, you know, advocates to kind of get on board and help connect them with, you know, the right opportunities. And I think with the right environment, the right opportunities, people can really thrive. So that's the inspiration from my girl. And I'm excited to kind of see how she develops. And like I said, I'm still learning so much about autism, and I'll never be an expert, but I can do my best to kind of get skilled up as much as possible.
Yeah. And autism's hard because we say an autism spectrum, but it is really a spectrum, because everybody's type of autism and what they experience and what they can handle is so different. I have a couple cousins that are on the spectrum, and some are very polar opposite. One could hold a perfectly fine job at a university and would complain about the college students, and she just had the greatest wit to her, and she is hilarious, and she'll call you out on anything and everything, and hilarious. But I have another cousin that is not going to be as functional as she is, and is on the extreme other end, and found out he actually has Angelman's is the specific diagnosis. And it was one of those, when you figure out where they are in that spectrum, how much more you can help them. Because once I saw Angelman's for him, because my other cousin, you know, it was just social skills and other things. But for him, when I read Angelman's, I'm like, that is my cousin. That is him. And it was amazing to just, when you learn and find that niche that they're in, that then you can find where they thrive.
Yeah.
And I almost am jealous of that, of like, you can figure out where you thrive. Cause even like myself as an individual, I'm still figuring out where I am in architecture, where my passion is, where are my strengths, what am I good or bad at? And it's the same thing.
Yeah, definitely.
But
Yeah,
I feel like
they
there's a stigmatism with them, but.
there is a stigmatism, and I think that's part of the thing we're trying to, with Assemble, and there's lots of other amazing nonprofits out there trying to help and, get people to be more aware. And I feel like it's getting better all the time. And yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Have you found what particular partners are you pulling in to assemble to kind of build that team? I know it's new.
Yeah. So, I've got some individual coaches that have diagnoses and, what's that word? Have a diagnosis and, are kind of coming together to kind of help with the coaching aspect. I'm also working with a pretty good, recruitment firm that specialize more so on the tech side of things, and helping, to train employers, in becoming more inclusive. So we're working together, and I said I feel that there's a need as well to kind of help with the creative industries, not just tech, which might be a bit more stereotypical. And so yeah, I've definitely met a lot of people now that kind of make sense. I'd be like, oh, they're wired differently, and that's why they think that way. So yeah, some partners there. And and then also obviously working together with the crowd in terms of the placement aspect.
Yeah. Is there particular advice you would give to companies? Like, is there a theme to the training you're trying to pull together?
It's struggle to answer that question, to be honest. It's so early days right now.
Because it sounds like more soft skills and understanding people is where my head, where. My thought process was going as we were talking, just trying to understand what employers could do better or stepping stones so then they can find the right individuals for them
I
without
think a lot.
trying to have that like misinterpretation of the individual.
Yeah, I think obviously the first thing is understanding it. And like I said, I'm still kind of learning a lot. So understanding like neurodiversity, helping, I guess, to break down those barriers as well. I think it in recruitment, you kind of coach people and you're saying like, good eye contact and, sit a certain way. And yeah, for people on the spectrum, a lot of the time eye contact is hard. Like it's difficult. Doesn't mean you're not paying attention or listening. So I think for employers, it's kind of making sure schedules are kind of organized and clear and transparent as well. I had an experience with a great firm recently who are very inclusive and fantastic at what they do, but the interview process was a bit of a nightmare, and it was all very last minute, which it can be. People have deadlines and they're trying to rush to get things done, but it wasn't really clear. They weren't giving me like who the person was meeting, how long the interview would be, all of those things. And if you think, I mean, probably for typical people as well, it'd be frustrating, but I think if somebody has those extra challenges, it would be Yeah, it'd be really unnerving and would not enable them to be their best self in an interview as well. So I think, yeah, understanding it, breaking down certain barriers, and I think creating those environments as well. So making sure all those like kind of like strategies in place to make sure that, it can kind of enhance that process for people that are interviewing, and then ultimately building that kind of culture of inclusion.
Yeah, I know I've been stressed just not knowing exactly who I'm speaking with or if you even know if it is just that one person, or are they going to bring in four other people to the interview and you just have that main person contact and so you don't know like do I need to print five resumes or two? Like even those questions and just trying to work to pull something together. I know I've been on the interview side, on the employer side. Sometimes it is, oh my gosh, I need another person in the room. And now this person has a client meeting. Can you come join me on this? So it's a last minute read their resume as fast as I can and jump in just to be there to help. But It's also stressful if somebody didn't know I was going to be there, or, you know, you can't fault them if they brought one portfolio because they thought they were only talking to one person and then there's another person. But if number of people throws you off in an interview, that could throw off your whole interview in terms of, my gosh, now what do I do? How do I talk? Where do I keep my eye contact when it's a whole room? You don't
exactly
know.
Yeah. And you know, if to do well in the interview, you want to be the most prepared person kind of going in. So yeah, that makes it challenging.
Yeah. So how do you balance it all? I know we've talked about, you know, burnout and late hours in architecture, but now trying to do recruitment and also a nonprofit that's also recruiting based and starting that. So
yeah,
how are you doing?
Well, hopefully by the time this goes out, a lot better. It's fine. It's good. I think it's enjoying what you do makes a certain difference. You know, you don't suffer from burnout. And I kind of love the recruitment aspect. I love connecting people. I love chatting with people about different opportunities. And obviously the stuff with Assemble is a passion project. It's quite close to my heart. So I'm trying to get people to partner up and help as much with that as possible. So ultimately I'm just kind of overseeing it without doing, you know, too much kind of legwork right now. So trying to work smarter rather than harder with it. So yeah, it's challenging, I would say that, but I think if it becomes a lot easier, if it's stuff you enjoy, you have more time for it.
Yeah, that's great advice that I tend to give anybody, because I know I'm working full-time and doing Mentor Dino, and yeah, Mentor Dino is that fire that lights up my day no matter what kind of work day I had or what kind of week. So when you can have those passion projects or even bring in that passion into your normal work routine, that completely changes your view of it as work, if that makes sense to anybody.
You get energy from it, like it energizes you. Think about something that you really love and enjoy, and all of a sudden you just, you know, that tiredness goes away, I find. So yeah, finding something you're passionate about is definitely a big help.
Yeah, I always recommend professionals almost keep a mini journal if they're starting to feel wary about their job or what they're doing or architecture in general, and try to find what are those energizers versus de-energizers.
Yeah.
To what can you do more of to energize yourself in the day? A lot like you discovering you liked helping people throughout. And so it's okay, how can I do more of that and less of what I'm not enjoying doing?
Yeah, 100%.
So is there any advice that you typically give as somebody's trying to figure out what they're passionate about?
I would say it goes back to what I was saying before about what you enjoy, what you like, what you don't what you dislike as well, and trying to figure out something that kind of aligns with those passions.
Yeah, that's great advice. That's fine. And I always like wrapping up my podcast with this final question. And it's, what advice do you have for young professionals just starting their career?
It's a great question. I would say be curious, be open-minded. And I think the early, you know, when you're younger, it's all about exploring different experiences, and don't feel that you're locked into one path. And I would say make sure that you're seeking growth opportunities as well. Anything to go out your comfort zone is a good thing. But most importantly, probably stay true to your values.
Yeah. No, that's great advice, because you never know where the world's going to take you. I don't think you would have thought you were going to do recruiting when you're in architecture school.
No, I don't know many people that want to grow up to be a recruiter, to be honest. But it's worked out, and all the skills that you learn. I mean, architecture is a fantastic profession for enabling you to potentially do other things.
Yeah. I always find recruitment as a different design problem. Because you're more finding that right blend of individual and firm culture, a lot like how it's, you know, building in occupants that use the space or the surrounding area and contexts. So
yeah,
I always find it just a people design problem and not a structure design problem.
So, I get that.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And if anybody could use some help finding a job, whether it be on the crowd or Assemble, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Probably on the websites. So thecrowdcreative.com is the information there. And then my website for Assemble is assembletalentgroup.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well.
Perfect. And I will leave all those links below in the show notes. So if you could use some help or want to pick Alex's brain on anything, you can reach out to him. But I want to thank you so much, Alex, for taking the time to speak with me. It was fantastic to learn more about your journey, recruitment, and even your nonprofit, which I think is fantastic.
Amazing. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I hope people enjoy what I had to say. And yeah, happy to help. If anyone reaches out.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion today. Learn some advice to take with you and see how our industry is all tied together to create the world around us. Check out the description below for any links or resources we discussed. If you liked the episode, please do me a favor and hit the subscribe button. Give me a thumbs up and leave a comment below. It really helps others be able to discover this resource and support finding that career path that best works for them. If you know someone that has inspired your own career that you'd like me to interview, let me know in the comments below, or you can reach out to me via my website or LinkedIn. I'd be happy to share their story or your own. Thank you again, and I cannot wait for the next career story I get to share with you next week.